Vale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this evening we're going to have with us Michael Shaw. And I should just mention that this coming Saturday, Michael and I are both going to be speaking at the Eagle Forum meeting that's going to be held in the DoubleTree Inn in just outside of Sonoma, close to Santa Rosa. And it's going to be a great program. Duncan Hunter is going to be there. Phyllis Schlafly, Dr. Jerome Corsi, all people we know and have been, at least all but Duncan Hunter, have been regular guests on our program. And certainly, if you are interested in going, it's an all-day conference, going to begin early in the morning and go into evening, and a couple of meals are going to be served. But you're going to have a reservation, so let me just suggest the telephone number to call, which is 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393. If you're interested in going, it should be a fascinating program. Well, that is the background. Of course, let's get to our special guest this evening, Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates, whose state is actually located right here in Santa Cruz, where I am, and certainly one of the centers of the Movement for Sustainable Development, one of the occult centers, one of the centers for the radical left, and of course all of these work together towards the destruction of freedom as we know it and the implementation of an all-powerful state that will control us from the cradle to the grave. So with that as a background, Michael, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I will say that sustainable development, while Santa Cruz was a cradle, sustainable development is now everywhere.
Absolutely. They tried it here, and now it's in literally every county in the United States. Indeed, it is all over the world. It is part of a worldwide movement under the name of Agenda 21, or at least that's one of the names, Agenda 21 being the agenda for the 21st century. But it is a program intent upon using the threat of damage to the environment to install a ruthless fascist dictatorship on not only the United States, but on nations throughout the world. So that is the background. You pick up the story, Michael.
Well, let's be sure we end up the story tonight about talking about the progress of sustainable development or globalist Agenda 21 policy in various common law countries around the world. But first, let's get to some basics and define some of the essential elements of sustainable development. You know, and my favorite way to do that is to use their own symbol. They have a symbol that they float amongst their compatriots that shows the conjoining of three circles, and under it is inscribed sustainable development. And so these three interconnected circles that are called by them, that is the sustainable developers, the three E's of sustainable development are this. One of the circles is labeled equity. That means a system of justice. One of the circles is labeled economy, and that's where the fascism of sustainable development rears its head. And then the third E is the environment, and that's the design to cause confusion amongst the public on environmental issues such that they will follow the environmental leaders right to their path of a new world order, affecting both our politics and our economics. It's the three E's that give us the secret to understanding what sustainable development really is.
All right, well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw as he begins to develop this idea of what is sustainable development, what do they tell the public it's about, and what is the truth, what is the secret agenda. We'll be right back. So, Michael, what is the secret agenda? What is it really all about?
Well, you know, it's not so secret. If you tap into the World Wide Web and just plug in the term Agenda 21, you'll have over a million sites that you can visit. Agenda 21 is worldwide. There's nothing secret about it. All you got to do is look. You'll find it. You will not find it on CBS News or on CNN or Fox News, but you will find it with a little research on the web, because those who are implementing this massive fifth column within the United States to bring about this new world order are very familiar. Many recent college grads particularly are very familiar with the language of sustainable development. So let's get right to what the three E's are. The first is equity. Now, equity really reflects the system of justice that's to be designed for the sustainable development world. See, sustainable development seeks to restructure the nature of human beings. So its system of justice, like communist system of justice, relies on social justice policies so that they can work to abolish private property in order to pursue a common good. And we hear this around town, Santa Cruz, and across the country, all over. We hear it from our presidential candidates. See, the pursuit, though, of a centrally determined common good ultimately requires the force of a police state to suppress individual freedoms. That's the first E. The second E is economy. You know, sustainable development is about the redistribution of wealth, of American wealth around the world, and of the transition of our economy from free enterprise to public-private partnership. You'll find in towns like Santa Cruz and Portland and Los Angeles, and well, I can't think of a town that doesn't have what's called affordable housing development. Affordable housing means you find a developer who will partner with the government, take massive government subsidies. In Santa Cruz County alone, $3 million of subsidies are allowed for builders who will build to the sustainable development or smart growth routine. What that is you've got to build small apartments stacked on top of one another along a railroad track or other public transportation module. Counties across America are receiving massive amounts of money to build this new world order housing regime. In it, prices are controlled. Someone buys the house. Someone chosen by government buys the house. The purchase price is controlled. The purchaser's sale price is controlled. The purchaser's...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Michael Shaw. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Michael is talking about the three E's of the environmental movement. And Steve pointed out that this whole idea of Agenda 21, you'll find out throughout the world. If you go on the Internet and look under Agenda 21, you'll find over a million different sites there. This is well known, because you're never going to hear it talked about by our political leaders. They don't want you to know. You're not going to hear it talked about by the media. They don't want you to know. But certainly within their group, of course, it's well known exactly what they're up to. He talks about the three E's of environmentalism, equity, economy, and the environment. Points out that So this whole idea is the redistribution of wealth, not the wealth of the wealthy, but the wealth of the middle class and the lower class, and to create true equality throughout the world. This would be everybody being poor, because we're moving from a free society into a totally controlled society. Equity, economy, the environment, and Michael was just beginning to talk about how this all ties into the environment. He did point out that suddenly they are giving large sums of money to developers who will go along with their agenda, who will build the low-cost housing for them. They'll give them $100,000 to build a low-cost 800-square-foot apartment, condominium area. And then the developer can turn right around and sell this, although there are some restrictions on it. So the developer makes a lot of money, not only from getting a $100,000 grant to build an 800-square-foot apartment, but also from being able to sell the same thing that he's already got the subsidy for. So you pick up the story there.
Well, what you just described, in summarizing my earlier comment, is a public-private partnership. In other words, some guys will stand up and say, yeah, Mr. Government, I'll be your partner. I'll build what you want. You give me this huge subsidy, and we'll work together. And that's what's happening in Santa Cruz. That's what's happening in every town and county across America. That's why our federal budget is so bloated, and it is why our local politics have become so corrupt. Well, that's part of the economic E of the three E's of sustainable development. The other economic part is the global look at trade policy. You see, sustainable development redefines free trade to mean centralized global trade, really crossing national borders in order to affect an international redistribution of American financial and natural resources. And we see that clearly. And now, you know, the culprits operating under the purse strings of the Democrat Party are saying we're going to salvage the middle class by simply taxing more, as though that will somehow have a benefit that outweighs all of the damage that both parties have done to the American economic system by participating in this global reorder of humanity. But you see, the equity and the economy ease of sustainable development are justified in the minds of many. In fact, I dare to say at this point in time, most Americans, and that is environment, because the globalists are out to save our environment. And by that means that they're going to take every resource out of citizen hands, centralize it, create the control necessary to bring down our population. Because at the core of sustainable development ideology is a call for a massive reduction in human population. What better way to do it than to grab hold of the economy, take hold of the landscape, characterize over 50% of the United States as, quote, wildland areas, to be managed in accordance with UN policy that would prevent all human habitation and human resource extraction from so-called wildland areas. That is why America is repopulating mass areas with wild animals, to make it incompatible for human beings to live and pursue life in areas that approximate half of U.S. territory.
You mean that's why they're bringing the wolves back? That's why they're bringing the grizzly bears back? That's why they're bringing all sorts of wild animals, and why mountain lions and other dangerous animals are being protected? They really certainly want to expand that so that humans won't be able to live in these wilderness areas, which will compromise over half, or at least half of the land mass of our nation.
Well, and if people want to understand how that is really coming to pass, go to the web and look for Y2Y. That means Yukon to Yellowstone. And this is a globalist beginning point for creating a wildlands jurisdiction that runs essentially from the North Pole through Mexico and all down avenues of the Pacific coast of the United States. And the first leg of that, a 2,000-mile landmass, 2,000 miles long and hundreds of miles wide, came up before the Washington State Legislature just this last month. And fortunately, a few informed and articulate people from the states of Idaho and the state of Washington were able to convince the Washington legislature not to create this two-country-wide wildland zone that would have led to the abolition of private property within that region. Now, this issue will be back. Understand that these issues are floating all around America. This is just simply the first one that has posed its head in a legislative context. But the plans for wildland designations throughout the U.S. are abundant. A good research project for anyone age 11 up is to look at Y2Y in the state of Washington, come to understand how it was defeated, and certainly understand what it was. Because if we just look at that circumstance and couple it with the Trans-Texas Corridor, just put that into your search engine, You'll get plenty of information. You can get plenty of information on that also at our website at freedomadvocates.org. What's happening in Texas is that a road masterminded by those who champion the idea of a North American Union has begun progress down in central Mexico on the Pacific coast. It is intended to hit the American border at Laredo, Texas. Governor Perry there, a Republican governor, working very closely with various federal departments and officials, has arranged for a Spanish corporation to build a massive freeway infrastructure to begin to serve all of the continent, the so-called Trans-Texas Corridor. And what this means is that goods will be offloaded in the central of Mexico coming from China and will come into, like a Trojan horse, into the United States without border customs. It is a way to decimate industries along the coast that take import goods, and it is a way to create a North American Union, much akin to the European Union. Huge amounts of dollars are going into, taxpayer dollars are going into this privately held operating asset. People in Texas have gotten wind of this. They've put their governor up against the wall. He's hiding behind the curtain of the federal government. The dollars are committed from both the state of Texas and the United States government to create this opportunity for this Spanish corporation to gain North American transportation control. Ordinary citizens in Texas are fighting. The language is getting louder and louder. It's why, frankly, Dr. Stan, I think the dollar is evidencing some difficulty, because that's the punishment coming from the globalist system to the independent American thought, which continues to demand a national sovereignty for a nation that protects the unalienable rights of each human being.
Well, of course, there are people who do not believe in the unalienable rights of the human beings, who really, of course, want to establish a fascist society under the control of a ruling elite, people like Al Gore and Governor Perry and others, and it doesn't really matter that the vast majority of the legislature of Texas, and I think if there's only, I forgot what the vote was, but it was several hundred to one or two, were against the Trans-Texas Corridor, but the governor was able to manipulate this, veto the legislation, and then hold it up so that it would not be returned to the state legislature so they could override his veto until after they'd gone on vacation. He would not call the people back again, and it'll be 2 years before they're back in session, and by that time the Trans-Texas Highway will be under construction and well along its way. I'd say that 90% of the people in Texas oppose it, and 95% of the Texas legislature opposes it. But it doesn't matter what the people want. There is an elite who uses this concept of democracy only to get the people to the idea that they really have something to say about it. But the decisions are made elsewhere for our future and for the future of generations unborn. And it all gets back to this idea of a ruling elite and then a great feudal mass. And this is what they really want. They want to return us to a feudal type of society. And right now they're in the process of redistributing the wealth of the American people, transferring our jobs, transferring our manufacturing facilities to other countries, and subsidizing that with our own tax money. And of course, unfortunately, what most people find difficult to believe is something Michael alluded to earlier, and that is that behind a lot of this is this concept of population control. They really do intend to massively reduce the population of the world through wars, through famine, through disease. And actually, they're in the process of creating new and terrible diseases. We have all sorts of new diseases, never existed before, and nobody ever asked where they came from. We see, of course, the spread of war in the Middle East and throughout Africa. And war is a very effective means of population control, but certainly not as efficient as famine and plague. Michael, you picked the story up there.
Well, let's move from the United States and take a hop across the other side of the world and look at Queensland, Australia. Queensland, Australia is one of six Australian states, probably about the size of the Pacific coast of the United States. In Queensland, people suddenly woke up and found that their government had changed. The state of Queensland was withdrawn from the Australian Constitution and its common law protections, and a new state of Queensland was established. This happened rather surreptitiously. Some legislation was put on the docket, and apparently under the Australian system, what happens is that after 12 months, if someone doesn't pick it up for debate, it becomes law. So what became law in Australia was in Queensland, Australia, was the implementation of global governance. What happened was this. Under the now existent Queensland, Australia Constitution, a private corporation called Brigalow is now the government master. All rights to profits from land transactions are now illegal. All inheritance rights in land are now eliminated. All farmers who want to remain living on their farms for the rest of their life must contract with Brigalow for purposes of determination of their product development and their product distribution. What Queensland, Australia is, very suddenly, for everyone living there, is a first member state of globalist world government.
Well, Michael and Sydney, I've never heard anything at all about this other than to you. Are the people in Queensland upset about this? Are the farmers upset because they're going to lose the right to their land? Are the relatives upset because they're going to lose the right of inheritance? And where does a corporation suddenly come off controlling all the land and what's produced on the land? That is the most incredible thing. Can the people vote this corporation out of control of their province?
Well, I don't know the answer to that or to much of the series of questions you asked. But what I do know is this, is that this problem presented itself very blatantly to the people of Queensland, Australia, and they failed to act. I am told that now they are intimidated from acting, and they are simply sliding down the abyss to tyranny. Now, that is the globalist plan generally. The problem they have in America is that our Constitution is far more vested in the concepts of liberty. The concept in America is that our land rights are alloidial, that is, that we own it all. It was never that way in Australia. The Queen always owned the minerals. And so they began with a compromise system. They weren't standing on the principle. And so when the big wave came, they just went under. In America, an even bigger wave is coming. The question is will we understand and stand up to the principles that make us American?
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment as we bring all our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Michael was just telling the most incredible story about what's happened over in Australia. And of course, you're not going to hear a word about this from the controlled media, but apparently there are five states in Australia. One of them is Queensland. It's one of the largest states. It's a heavily populated state. And certainly what happened was that a small group of people in the legislature got through a law and they simply took Queensland out of the rest of Australia. It became a privately owned section, a privately owned state. And it was owned by a corporation named Brigalow. And Brigalow actually then had the rights to all of the land there. And if you were a farmer, you could live on your land, but of course you can't pass it on to your children. They somehow or other are able to control what is produced on the land, and of course people certainly have no right to the land at all. They've taken away all property rights, but they'll let you live on your land until you die. But after that, of course, the state gets it. And what about what the products that are produced? What does Brigalow do as far as the profits that are produced by the land, Michael?
Well, I assume it's building the bank of the common good. But what Brigalow is really designed to do is to make Australia part of a global community. And, of course, one of the concerns is that as an island nation, they've been fairly immune from a number of diseases or other problems. And now that their trade policy is being dictated by globalists, much like our own is, they open up their shores to many issues that they've not had to face in the past, which create another whole set of problems. But it does serve the end of population reduction. So if you were a globalist, the idea of breaking down the national sovereignty of Australia or the national sovereignty of the United States and the national sovereignty of Britain all makes sense, because when the English countries go, when the countries vested in the concepts of common law are terminated, in other words, common law, that grew out of the Magna Carta, is gone, well, the whole idea of unalienable rights grew out of that tradition, and it will die with the death of that tradition. And when it does, human beings become chattel to a ruling elite, life never to be emulated by the style of the American experience, circa 1776 to, well, named today.
And so there are people who do not believe in individual freedom for the masses, only for the elite, and they really want to do away with this concept of private property. It sounds like they've done that pretty well over there in Queensland, haven't they?
Well, they certainly have. They may allow you to, quote, own your toothbrush, but let's face it, if the citizens can't own the resources that go to the creation of a toothbrush, well, they only get their toothbrush. If citizens don't own the resources, they only get their toothbrush if the government chooses to give it to them.
And really, this is such an amazing thing to have happened when a corporation comes in and suddenly, do they have the corporation have the rights to all the minerals there or what?
Well, I don't know how that works between the Queen and the private corporation that runs the government. But one thing is for sure, the concept that a citizen can work and earn and create something out of resources is extinct in the state of Queensland.
And this is really a very recent development, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure I have the whole timeline in effect. It's not as recent as we might assume, given that we've never heard that before. But the complete blackout of media reports on the subject is what is doubly astounding about the circumstance.
All right, fine. Well, we'll have to look into this in much more detail, because it would be a great story, but there's so many great stories that never get told because of the control of the media. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, let's talk about another one of those. The mother of common law ideas, England, has succumbed. Recently, the United Kingdom has signed a treaty by the Queen and by Gordon Brown that ends the British experience effective January 1, 2009. When Great Britain will join the European Union, it will eliminate its counties. It will establish 6 UN regions within the current country of England.
But of course, the people never voted for that, have they?
They have not, and the news doesn't even report the treaty.
In fact, of course, the people were always told that they would have a right to actually vote on whether or not they wanted to join the European Union. And they're not going to be given that right, because there is an elite group that believes in this idea of uniting Europe, and then uniting North America, and then uniting the world into this new world order and the new world religion. Well, you go right ahead, Michael.
Well, I think the issue that I'm attempting to present here is that the movement of Agenda 21, or sustainable development, they're synonymous terms, that the movement isn't just something happening in Santa Cruz. In fact, it's not just happening in the U.S. It is happening all over. We are seeing common law countries fall like flies in the face of the sustainable development attack. All being done, you know, without firing a shot. Nikita Khrushchev told us that's how they would do it. And today we can stand aside and we can look across the field and we can say, golly, that's what's happening. Without firing a shot, Australia is going down. What's happened to Queensland is now planned in all but one of the remaining Australian states. The pressure in the U.S. on sustainable development policy is massive. It is in your county. I don't care where you are in the United States. Every county has a sustainable development policy. That means they have a policy to bring about, step by step, the abolition of private property, the restructure of the family unit, the massive reduction in human population. And that's why it's necessary if you begin to understand what sustainable development is. You're not going to find it in your newspaper. You're not going to find it in the NGO, the Chamber of Commerce. Your children are not going to come home from their government schools understanding this because they're going to be bred to become part of the system. What you have to do is take upon your own study. You can't fire blindly. You've got to know what it is that we're fighting if we're going to be effective at defeating it. If we are not effective at defeating sustainable development globalism, our descendants, ourselves, will live in a system devoid of individual liberty, devoid of any ideal of unalienable rights. We will be living in a society where we are biological resources to be used for the presumed advantage of the common good, even if that means massive population reduction. It is essential that Americans understand the nature and purpose and methodology of sustainable development.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and we're going to be bring all of our stations back on board here in just a moment. But it's so vitally important that people understand that this is a master plan. And the fact that you haven't heard of it reflects the degree of control. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking with Michael about this whole program for sustainable development. And, of course, the reason people don't understand what we're talking about, or it sounds a little foreign, is because the media is controlled. And the last thing the elite want is for the public to know until, of course, all freedom has simply become a remembrance of things past, and the people are so impoverished and are so frightened to death that most of them will refuse to speak out and oppose this move towards world government under the ruling elite. Well, before we go on, Michael, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization and get the great material that you offer.
Well, our entity is called freedomadvocates.org. You can see our work easily enough by going on the web to that simple address, freedomadvocates.org. Our phone number is 831-684-2232. That's 684-2232, area code 831. Or visit freedomadvocates.org. And our purpose, really, with our website is to create tools for neighborhoods to deal with the local implementation of sustainable development policy. You know, there's no way that ordinary citizens, no way that I can figure out, that we can come up and make an effect and change the course of America when it comes to its involvement with the United Nations or the World Trade Organization or the World Bank or the Bank of International Settlements and all the rest of the globalist governance agencies. We can't, as ordinary Americans, we can't fight that system. as ordinary Americans, we can't even get Congress to pay attention. The answer in the fight against sustainable development takeover or takedown of America is to be able to operate at the local level. And if you understand that local politicians are rewarded by political parties and by the political system itself for pursuing sustainable policy, we can begin to understand how it is that it seeps into our community. The way to fight the globalist movement is local. Become vocal local. That means you've got to understand what the globalist goals are and methodology. But once you understand that, you've got to take the battle right to home. People need to become informed about what sustainable development is. It needs to become just not very chic to seek the globalist takeover of America in your county. When enough counties really get this perspective, then an effect on Washington, D.C. can happen.
Well, yeah, I think it's very interesting for people to understand that this is all laid out. It's all part of a plan. And certainly Joan Vian, in her book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, points out that back in 1991, 1992, there was a meeting on the good ship Britannia, the Prince Charles's yacht. Prince Charles called people from all over the world, key leaders, bankers, financiers, corporate executives, people like Al Gore were there. And they were going to lay out the plan of the elite for the common people. And so that's exactly what they did. I believe Marie Strong was there. But they laid out the plan that was to be presented to the Second Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. And it all centered around this idea of sustainable development, frightening the people about the danger to the environment, and then passing a great deal of legislation. Specifically, one of the pieces of legislation was the Desertification Act, which would give the United Nations control over two-thirds of the landmass of the world. And that was, of course, authorized by the United States Senate. And most senators didn't even know what they were voting on. And then, of course, there's the Kyoto Protocol, the Biodiversity Treaty. Well, the Biodiversity Treaty was never presented to the Senate because, of course, it was obvious it wasn't going to pass after the plan that Michael's been talking about was exposed, the idea of putting half of the landmass of the United States into wilderness area, another quarter into border areas, and then the rest of the people would live on the remaining quarter percent. And so the Biodiversity Treaty was voted down. It was actually not voted on in Washington, D.C., but it is being implemented by successive administrations. And then, of course, the Kyoto Protocol has been signed by most of the nations of the world, because it has not been signed here because, of course, it's a plan to destroy the industrial base of our nation, because it requires that we, of course, cut our energy consumption back to the way it was long before 1991. And, of course, what it'll do would be to destroy the industrial base of America, but eventually will be passed, because the whole idea is to destroy the industrial base and to impoverish our people. And, of course, you do that by convincing everybody we're running out of electricity, we can't have nuclear electricity because we don't know what to do with the waste, we can't burn coal or oil because, of course, produces contamination, and so we burn natural gas, produces CO2 and going to promote global warming, frighten the people into giving up their freedom. Would that be a fair appraisal, Michael?
I think it certainly would, Dr. Stan. But what I think what listeners need to begin to realize is that while the battle is going to be tough, it's not a battle that will be fought with guns, but it is a battle that will be fought with minds. And for every person whose mind's not prepared for the battle that will affect their own lives and certainly the lives of all their progeny, if we don't prepare for this battle, we will have failed our mission in life. And so it's important that we begin to inform ourselves so that we can inform others, because we need to take action when human liberty is under the grand threat that human liberty is under today. So my first suggestion is that we need to cause freedom to become solidly anchored by promoting the ideals of private property. And that happens in your own neighborhood when the county government is out trying to take somebody's property. Come to their rescue. It starts right there. When someone's property is taken, it's only a matter of time before yours is. Remember the German expression, first they came for the Catholics and I didn't pay attention. Then they came for the Jews and I didn't pay attention. Then they came for the blacks and I didn't pay attention. Finally they came for me and there was nobody left to defend me.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to Maggie, who's calling from Texas here. She's been hanging on the line very patiently. Maggie, did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I certainly do. Mr. Shaw, would you please repeat your definition of affordable housing? Because we have a giant complex of that type going up very nearby. Is it defined by some arbitrary level of salary of the people who take this housing, or is it defined by the fact that somehow the company that builds it gets paid twice?
All right, Vine, can you explain what affordable housing is for Maggie?
Well, affordable housing is really a new development that is price controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is the developer gets paid twice. He gets paid by the buyer.
Right.
Chosen by the government based upon one of two standards. Either his standard to the local community, his value to the local community, or his limited income.
Mm-hmm.
So what you end up with as affordable housing developments are built are people who are entirely under the thumb, because government now imposes the rules of living. Here in Santa Cruz is an affordable housing project that does not allow the owner to have anyone sleep over.
Right, uh-huh. It's
without,
not really you.
Without permission. So
uh-huh.
If you want to have your mother sleep over, you know, she might be 80 years old, mm-hmm. You need permission from the governmental authority to have her stay in your place overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, don't they actually control, of course, when you go to sell the property, how much you can charge for it, who can sell it to, even though you bought and paid for it? Sania, you may have gotten it cheaper than the regular price, but you never really own it because it's still under their control, isn't it, as far as...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the way they get that control is by paying the developer these huge, huge amounts of money, tax dollar receipts. They get cycled back to the local community. And I had our local board of supervisors tell me, Michael, you don't understand. We have to do this. We don't get our federal money otherwise. And that's happening in every community now. It's not just Santa Cruz. Every community in America, every county.
And I think, Maggie, what you have to understand is that what they're saying is, look, some people don't have enough money to buy a home, but wouldn't it be nice if everybody could have a home? And so, well, we're from the government, and we really like people, and so we want, of course, to provide affordable housing for the people. And so, Sydney, sometimes they'll give them to people, dependent upon their... They like them, they've got friends in government. Other times they will give them, they'll have drawings, and everybody applies, and people who have a lottery, and they get these houses. But they maybe will cost half of what a comparable house would cost. It's called affordable housing. And, of course, many times developers are told, well, you can't put in your development unless you have a certain 10, 20, 30% affordable housing. But then that housing is under government control after that, and it never really belongs to the people who think that they have a home, and certainly it's better than no home at all. But it is the principle of, where do we get the federal government have the right to provide for the housing of other people? Why should I pay for somebody else's housing? And, of course, it really is. There's these communist concepts of redistribution of wealth, among the population, or equitable distribution of wealth. But, of course, the next step is not only equitable distribution of wealth within nations. According to the Earth Charter, point 10A, it is equitable distribution between nations. And so they're going to have to grind down the living levels of the American people to that of the Mexican peasant. Anything else you'd like to add to that, Michael?
No, I think, Maggie's still on the line.
Yes,
I want to make sure
yes,
the question was answered.
What sort of people end up living in these kind of developments then? I mean, are they solidly middle class, or do they allow it to deteriorate? What can be expected of this?
Well, you can expect political operatives, you know, buddies of the system, you know, guys who aren't being paid much. But
no, I mean the people who are living in it, not the people who get the contract.
Pardon?
I mean the people who actually buy these houses.
Well, the people who buy these houses certainly include a lot of governmental activists. You know, young, sustainable development privates.
Oh, so truly they don't mind that kind of control on their living conditions?
Well, you know, if you're 22 years old and you're graduating from the University of California at Santa Cruz,
mm-hmm.
you look around at the average home price, and these are not particularly lavish homes. We're talking about huts around the beach. The average price of $800,000. And you're a 22-year-old, you say, this isn't 1972. It's not like I'll be able to work for a few years and buy a house.
Oh,
so
I see.
The system of monetary management has driven us to a point where the young people say, I'll become a sustainable development soldier. Yeah, give me that house and tell me I own it. You know, I don't even know what ownership means. I went to University of California. I don't know what that means, so I'm happy. I'm living down by the beach, you know. My neighbor had to pay $800,000, but I got a sustainable development job with the community, and so I was able to buy it for $180,000. Boy, aren't I swift.
Oh, I see. So that, in other words, sucks the younger people into a system in which they're going to be controlled, and they'll start out their lives that way, and they'll be used
now,
to it.
That's not the only people who buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the other people are people who just have low incomes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they become solid voters for the sustainable development system because they're told you wouldn't have gotten your house but for our affordable housing program. Okay? Affordable housing is a simple redistribution program. It's amazing how everyone in town doesn't know what's happening, and yet they're paying the taxes, and it's happening all over town.
Okay, anything else, Maggie?
Well, just that there is this giant conference. It's an international conference on the new urbanism that's going to be held in Austin in about a week.
Why don't you go there and then give us a call and tell us what happens? But I can assure you that it's all part of the same program.
Right,
certainly
exactly.
Is.
What do you suggest I gravitate to?
I would go with a camera or a recorder and, you know, and write some reports on it afterwards.
God bless and thanks, Maggie. But get
yes,
other people down
so
there
much.
Listening to our programs. We've got to get the people educated to understand that this is not something originating just by accident. It is financed by the wealthiest people in the world who have a different agenda because they worship a different God. Thanks so very much, Maggie. And, okay, go right ahead, Michael.
Well, your point is well taken because it's hard to understand the range of the sustainable development sword without understanding the nature of finance in the 21st century. We've now existed in a world where for essentially 100 years, all the currencies, all the countries of the world have opted for fiat money. Globalist, funny, fiat made out of thin air money. And the consequence of that is that fiat money comes from the creation of globalist bankers who create money out of thin air, loan it, and earn interest on that loan forever. If you take 100 years of the accumulated profits of all the money made out of thin air and loaned to somebody around the world, and you can probably not begin to imagine how huge this globalist banking money pie really is. But when you begin to think about it more, you begin to realize how, that's how control over the political parties, control over the media, and control over the apparatus around the world happens. It's from all this excess money made by bankers who made money out of thin air for their eternal receipt of interest payments. The money is now centralized. It's why Americans feel broke. It's the money is centralized, not just amongst the rich, but through a banking system and a monetary system that was designed to do that. This is the call of Ron Paul to get us to sound money, get us to real constitutional money. Because if we don't, we're going to find ourselves succumbed by the global to local action plan called sustainable development. Two courses of action: honest money, local action, to take back the principles of America county by county until Washington falls under our pressure.
And as Lenin said, there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch its currency. And not one person in a million will understand what you've done. Not one person in a million will understand what you've done. Ladies and gentlemen, they are intentionally debauching our currency. They intend to impoverish our people, and nobody's going to understand what's going on. Most people will lose everything they worked for their whole life. They won't understand until it's far too late. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think my summary would be that America is still standing, and what we need to do to keep it standing is to understand how we're being undermined. And I've spent 7 or 8 years now, Dr. Stan, really focused on the elements of sustainable development, along with a whole lot of other people. And it's clear to me, it's clear to everybody who's looked, that I know, that when you understand the economic and the judicial elements of sustainable development, you can understand the call for this phony environmentalism. You can begin to see through the globalist takedown of America, just like it's taken down Australia, it's now taking down England. They're going to be finished soon. America needs to stand stronger than ever. We need to understand what we're fighting, then we can defeat it. But if we don't understand it, we won't. We'll lose to it. That's why knowing sustainable development is the key. FreedomAdvocates.org is your tool to understand and distribute the information in your community.
And, of course, you've got some great pamphlets on sustainable development, don't you?
Well, we do. We're about to come out with a third pamphlet, a longer one than the first two. But the first one, Understanding Sustainable Development, is a bedrock. Our third edition, it's circulated in certain locales very extensively. And in those locales, there has begun to be a reaction to the dynamic of the importation of sustainable development policy into those communities. It's going to take a whole lot more effort and energy to get America on course. But step by step, we're coming closer to seeing a path. We're getting us back on course and getting rid of the Democrat-Republican takedown of the U.S., Queensland was taken down.
In other words, here in the United States, we have two political parties, both controlled by the globalists, both heading in the same direction. We can't let the people know that their elections really are phony. And, of course, if the people wanted to stand up and take it back, why, of course, they'd use the electronic voting machines and rig the elections, and because they must control America, because America is the key. Sidney, are you offering that DVD of the talk that you gave at our conferences or at Orleans Conference?
We have those DVDs available on our website. We're remastering the website, so the store is a little bit in compunction right now, but yes, we do. We've got plenty of videos that really give...
We're out of time, summary. Mike. God bless. We'll see you on Saturday.
All right, I'll look forward to it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sidney. We have a fair amount of information on this. We have a DVD called Sustainable Development, The Road to World Government. It's a talk we gave. I think probably the most important thing we offer, it would be our Sustainable Development syllabus. And if you get that along with the DVD, why, of course, it's a much better situation. But the Sustainable Development syllabus has about a 30-page summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992. It is the master plan of the elite to limit the population of the world to take the common people out of their cars and get us onto bicycles, to cut back on the electricity consumption and the water consumption, and to lower living standards of the average person in the world to that of the Eastern European resident. That's their description of what's going on. It's a fascinating summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment. It was actually 1,100 pages, put out by the Cambridge University Press, which we have, but most people could never read that. But one of our friends went ahead and summarized it, did a wonderful job, and it's available in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, along with the Earth Charter, the World Bank Water Policy, explanation of the Georgia Guidestones, my treatise on population control agenda, and believe me, they really do intend to kill off most of the people in the world. And you say, who could possibly be that evil? Well, ladies and gentlemen, the same spiritual force that dominated the Nazi movement is alive and well and working in the sustainable development movement today. And you must really understand that there are powerful spiritual forces here. If you've not yet seen Constance Cumby's talk on The Emergence, the story of the coming world leader, we have that on DVD. If you've not seen Chris Pinto's great, very professional DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, or the sequel, Riddles in Stone, The Secret History of America's of the Architecture of Our National Capital, those two DVDs will change the way you look at the world. And then we actually have a DVD put out by Chris Pinto, a talk he gave here at our last conference, I guess that was 2 years ago, and it's called The New Atlantis, or The Atlantis Connection, the exact title. What is the Atlantis Connection? Well, it's the idea that there are people out there who are involved in the worldwide occult movement, literally millions of people, who believe that America is to be the new Atlantis. And just as the old Atlantis that existed and was lost, 5 millennia or more ago, was to have led the world. It was a wonderful, well-developed society. So America has become the new Atlantis that will lead the world into this one world government and one world religion. That's the Atlantis Connection. We recommend it to you. And then we have a 4-tape set on my interviews with Constance Cumby. All of this information is available from Radio Liberty if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do have a 4-tape set on sustainable development. We carry the book set up, and Holly Swanson's book set up and sold out. Set up and sold out by Holly Swanson. We recommend to you an excellent book, give you an overview of this whole environmental movement, which is being used to create a fascist society, to create fear in people's hearts so they'll be willing to give up their freedom. Understand, none of these things are happening by accident. That's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is so very, very important. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And certainly my talk on the forbidden secret, because there really is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies and the mystery religions, and are manifested today in many of the organizations that exist here. And the people who are in it understand the secret, and you should as well. And of course, we have a 4-tape set called The Secret Behind the Secret, taking you into Rhonda Byrne's movement, which is permeating the Christian church today. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this next hour, the views of Melody Cederstrom, who supports Radio Liberty, and we always look forward to having Melody on. Hi, how are you doing, Melody?
Fine, Dr. Stan, and yourself?
No complaints at all. Did you get much response from that Saturday program we did?
Yes, I did.
Well,
and it was a good response, and the response came in right when the market was having a major pullback, as everyone knows, in the past week or so. And we've been, usually you ask me how business is, and it's usually business as usual, but that's certainly changed. And I think it's a fundamental change that people now begin to take advantages of the pullbacks in these prices, where before they usually didn't do anything. They were more concerned that gold was going down, but now they realize the fundamentals that drive gold, and a lot took advantage of the pullback in gold. So it was extreme, and this was the first time in the history of our company that I can say that we had a very difficult time keeping up with the phone call.
Well, I'm sorry you had a difficult time, but I'm glad you had so many calls that you had difficulty. And I'm glad you got a good response to the Saturday program. Well, are you finding it's difficult at all to get silver or silver coins? I've heard that they, at least from some dealers, are having difficulty getting silver. Have you run into that at all?
Well, in some degree, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The U.S. Treasury, halted the minting of the one-ounce silver eagle, the American silver eagle, because they cannot keep up with the demand. They did this earlier this year in January, and they did so again this month. So the silver eagles are, you know, have been bought off the shelf, and the supply on them is limited. Of course, as people sell their older silver eagles, they will float around, but because of the demand, you know, they're immediately taken off the shelf. 90% bags, 100-ounce bars, silver rounds, you can get the certified Morgans and Peace dollars. They are readily available. But if the buying continues, of course, you will see those supplies diminished as we go along. So it's sort of a yes and no type of answer to the question as far as shortages. And I've read lots of articles, and I've heard where these dealers are finding difficult to keep it in inventory. But the silver eagles, yes. Some of the other products have been available. And, you know, just like Johnson Matthey, I was told by my buyer that they are now beginning to mint the 100-ounce bars after they haven't done so after several years. It's been a while since they minted 100-ounce bars. So for them to come out and say that they're going to exercise a new product like that, I'm not so sure that it's equated to a quote-unquote silver shortage or quote-unquote a product shortage of the 1-ounce silver eagle. So we'll have to see how this plays up. It really depends a lot on demand, depends a lot on the silver prices as we go along. So, but 90% bags are readily available.
Okay, fine. Now, what about the gold supplies? Are they readily available? All the gold coins are still readily available?
The premiums have risen. Sometimes I hesitate to offer like Krugerrands because the premiums on them are so high, but they are there. But premiums are rising, and it's not just, I read an article where someone was complaining that the dealers are raising their prices. Well, it's not even so much our prices, but it's also our wholesalers. You know, as they find that the demand, they're going to, you know, raise their prices. So, therefore, it might not always be our prices that we rise, but certainly our wholesalers' prices that are rising.
Okay,
so
you hold that price. We're going to be back in just you hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom. So that most of the gold coins are available. It's just that the premiums are rising on them. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, I am. And naturally what no one, all these years, people don't realize the thin market of coins. It will not take a tremendous increase in buyers to take it off the shelf and make it difficult to come by on coins. There are some coins in the $20 gold pieces where the demand has been strong that, you know, if someone came in and wanted 100 of them, there might be a week or so delivery. So in cases, you know, we'll still short them, we'll still lock in the prices and make delivery on them. So so it's iffy. It's there. So if someone came in with $1 million into one coin, it would probably take that coin off the shelf for a little bit until more came back on. So it's the supply and demand issue that we have. So,
well, how often do you get somebody come in with $1 million, though?
That's just it. And it's the same way with this silver. If someone came in with $250,000, $500,000, or $1 million plus, certainly that would take off a lot of product out of the shelf. But, you know, when you have the normal people who are investing to preserve their wealth, yes, there's some significant amounts that do come into the market, but you don't have a significant number of them. So,
well, anyway, I'm glad things are going well for you. And Sydney, what do you hear from people? Are people really becoming concerned about the fact that the dollar is losing its value? Are people concerned about the inflation, the spiral that we're in, where, of course, we're probably running 10 to 12% inflation? Or do people recognize these things that are happening as you talk to them?
Yes, they do. But yet they have a lack of understanding of why. There's all kinds of reasons why. They know something's happening. They know they're spending more and more for their food items, for their groceries, for the gasoline, of course. It's in the news. You know, it's telling them. But they really don't understand, and it's as simple as monetary policy. And but they can equate things to the Iraqi war. And I guess the reasons that promote them to purchase and preserve their wealth is not as important as them actually preserving their wealth. So they are concerned. They see the dollar losing value. They see their pension plans at risk. So they are taking steps. And again, when we had this pullback in gold, I was quite surprised at the response, because usually if you had a $100 drop in gold, it would become very quiet. You know, because people believe if it dropped 100, it's going to drop 200 and 300 and so forth. And they wait to see what happens. This time they did not wait. And it was certainly a change in fundamental buying for the gold buyers.
Hold that thought right there. Anyway, Sandy Melody was just saying that this was really so much different than what has happened before. And ordinarily, when you see a dramatic drop in the price of gold in the past, everybody would just simply drop out of the market. Whereas this time, why, of course, when it dropped down, why, apparently a lot of people decided this was a good time to get on board. And, of course, we got on to the low point. Why, of course, gold has come back almost to 950 here. How low did it actually get, Melody?
We got down to 903, I believe, was the low.
And so they come back to almost 950, 949, I think, today. So basically, it's come back, and, of course, I think this was simply an artificial drop in the price of gold. Some people say it was because J.P. Morgan got hold of the gold that Bear Stearns was holding and just dumped it on the market to drive the price down. But, of course, it didn't take long before that gold was quickly absorbed, because people throughout the world are looking for stability. And they realize they're not going to find it in fiat currencies, and every currency in the world is a fiat system, even, of course, the Swiss currency, even except that it's probably the most stable fiat money system in the world today, but no fiat money system is stable indefinitely. They all eventually, of course, collapse. So certainly it's interesting as we watch this thing unfold. We see gold drop, silver drop even more dramatically, and now both of them coming back very, very well. And I think people are beginning to understand that our whole economic system is beginning to crumble from within, and people have no idea how bad this is going to be, but the prices of homes are dropping. Certainly the price of oil and other things are increasing. The price of of imported goods is beginning to rise as the value of our dollar diminishes, and people don't understand that we are really at the what I believe are the end stages of a fiat money system, whereas the Fed is frantically trying to get us out of the hole they've created for us. What they all they're doing is simply pumping more money into the economy, and by so doing, they're weakening the dollar even further. But the problem is not a matter of liquidity, in other words, a shortage of money. The problem is a matter of solvency, where so many of our major international and national financial institutions are literally bankrupt. Would you like to comment on that, Melody?
Yes, they are bankrupt, and it is a worldwide. It's beginning to hit China. It's beginning. We've already seen it hit where we've seen various countries coming out and talking about their banks and their institutions that are, you know, bankrupt. And as you mentioned, solvency. We have Ireland. So this is a worldwide situation. But when you realize that it is part of the agenda, part of what has been planned, and this is all coming due. I mean, their plan is being executed. So, I mean, we know and we see what is going on. So the best thing that by knowing, you can always prepare for what is to come.
And of course, people say, well, why would they do this sort of thing intentionally? It must have been an accident. Of course, it wasn't an accident. They knew exactly what they were doing when they were encouraging people to take out loans, housing loans that they couldn't afford, to allow them, of course, to lie, to get these large loans, to be able to buy a house with nothing down. And I mean, you just can't run something like that. And then, of course, now that so many people who had homes, who bought homes that they couldn't afford, and now they can't keep up with the payments as their adjustable rate mortgages now are going to a fixed rate mortgage at a much higher level than before, and the people are just losing their homes, and the people who hold the bonds on those homes are losing them, financial institutions throughout the world. And then, of course, we have the whole derivative system. We're talking somewhere between $500 and $700 trillion. Now, that may not sound like very much to you, but you have to realize that the entire economy, the world economy for a year, of all the nations of the world, is only about $45-48 trillion. And you're talking about derivatives out there, certainly is somewhere in the neighborhood between $500 and $700 trillion, and they could all come crashing down, and people say, well, how could we have gotten in this mess? And you have to understand, there are people who look at the world differently. They really want a world government. You can't have a world government if you have sovereign nations and independent currencies. So you have to destroy the currencies, destroy the nations, create a global currency, create a global government. I think that's really what's behind all of this. And when you see this thing coming to pass, why, you know, at least it's not such a surprise. There really are people who've created this problem. They knew what they were doing. They're a lot smarter than I am, a lot smarter than most of us are. But, of course, they're very evil in their intent. So how many people do you think really understand what we're talking about, Melody?
There's people who listen to your program, people who listen to various programs, but just so few people really understand, and probably most of those are gold buyers. And if you look at the gold buyers, you're looking at probably less than 1% of the population. So it's a very small. Now, people are feeling the pinch. They are feeling what is happening. And as I mentioned earlier, they'll tag it to various things that they can understand. I mean, I was talking to someone down in Maryland, and he told me they're paying $4 for diesel, but he relates it to the Iraqi war. He doesn't understand that the Iraqi war is just a symptom of everything else that is, and down to the true fact and the truth of as the world government. It is just part of it. And but at least they are beginning to feel the pinch. I was reading an article earlier about the truckers, how they're struggling with their wages, and you know, they see all this free health care and free schooling and decent working conditions given to the illegal aliens, and they're out there struggling in order to make a living, and their payments on their trucks, and so people are beginning to see this it's very unfortunate, and they're going to become angry, and maybe some changes will come because of that, but it's certainly affecting a lot of people in a very sad way.
Well, I think the rise in the price of oil, of course, is having a tremendous impact. There's no reason why diesel should be more expensive than of course, regular gasoline. In fact, it always used to be far less because it's much easier to manufacture. But the people who really control everything, since they're able to control the production of gasoline and diesel, they've simply jacked the price up. And what are the people who have diesel trucks going to do? They have no alternative but to go ahead and pay the exorbitant prices. But my fear, of course, is this is going to have a profound impact upon the farmers who have the tractors that are diesel, people who have their private generators that are diesel, and then, of course, the truck drivers. Certainly one of these days it's going to get to be so expensive they're not going to be able to afford to drive their trucks unless, of course, they can pass the increased price of fuel onto the people they're delivering to. And we could very well get to the point where we're not going to be able to readily get things delivered into our local stores and to our grocery stores, and then think of the implications of that.
That's true. It's difficult to pass on the increases. I mean, heck, we see it here in the gold and silver market. My wholesalers are raising prices, and it's difficult to pass those prices on to the customers because, you know, they're looking around, and they're looking to get as much as they can, and you can't blame them. And it's the same thing for any business owner out there that has to compete with the bigger companies, and so it's to where they can where they're able to absorb the higher prices. So the farmers and in my view, it's all the beginning steps of having, you know, these different areas, transportation, distribution, all become nationalized. So, and that's part of the, you know, that's part of what they need to do.
Well, of course, what we're seeing right now, of course, is the skyrocketing cost of wheat. Wheat and sometimes is $16, $17 a bushel, I've heard, and sometimes it's even a lot more than that. But you're talking about almost a five-fold increase in the price of wheat. And very soon that's going to be passed on to the price of bread. In fact, in many parts of the world, there are riots going on right today, you know, because of the rising food prices. Certainly in parts of the country, parts of the world where they are producing large amounts of rice, they have people in the fields guarding the fields at nighttime because people are going in and stealing the rice because it's becoming so valuable, because the price of rice is going up. And the price of corn is going up. And as a byproduct of that, certainly the price of chickens, which eat corn, are going up. And the price of eggs, which are laid by chickens that eat corn, are going up. And certainly the price of meat is going up because they fatten the cattle many times on corn and similar products. So people don't understand that this thing is just beginning to take off. And when the government tells us that there's no inflation, they're simply lying to the people. And the real inflation rate, according to Bob Chapin, and I really believe he's accurate, is between 10 and 12%. 10 and 12%, simply at that rate, you know, in 10 years, you've lost half the value of your currency, if not more. And, of course, in 20 years, well, your currency becomes essentially worthless. But I believe, of course, that with the M3, such as it is, if you ought to be checking and following these figures, the M3 is probably close to 16% of the present time. And M3, about a year down the line, of course, is manifested in inflation. It could very well be by the end of this year why we'll be running 16 to 17% inflation. Think of the implications of that upon your insurance policy, upon your pension, upon your bonds, your treasury bonds, your CDs, anything that is tied to the dollar, your annuities, your money you have simply sitting in a bank drawing interest. People do not understand that when you go into an inflationary spiral with a fiat money system, you erode the value of the currency. You erode it very, very quickly. Inflation is not rising prices. It is the increasing the money supply, so you have more money chasing a fixed amount of goods. Well, Melody, certainly you must be talking to people across the country. Other coin dealers are pretty busy at the present time?
Well, I don't know about them, but I know we are. But I think there's been a lot of information that's been released, and folks, I can only stress again, the number one thing that you want to do when you purchase, I've been saying this for years, and now you're beginning to see these stories that are being filtered through, always take possession of your gold and silver if possible. The only other item that is safe out there, and if you can call it safe, would be if you have an IRA and you have it stored in an approved IRA account, which truly there is only one that I trust in this country, and that's with Gold Star out of Texas. There's rumors and rumblings about these people who issue certificates, and it's going to be the same thing for these online gold and gold currencies and gold monies. Folks, if you don't have it in your pocket, you don't own it. And so many things can happen from one day to the next day. And even J.P. Morgan was fined millions of dollars because they told their clients they were buying and storing their gold for them, and in fact, they weren't. So it's so important because you have people that are, inflation hits everybody, and these are people that are in business, and they make business decisions, and if they get behind or they speculate or they go in there and they hedge, and then they end up with margin calls, and anything can happen if they hedge themselves properly. They get behind in delivery. So when a reasonable delivery becomes a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 or 6 months, there's problems. And I've heard where there's been storage problems from six months, and then all of a sudden it's 6 weeks. Well, folks, there's something wrong with that. So always take delivery of your product. And even IRAs, is that the safest? Does it carry risk? Of course it does. Everything carries risks, but there's varying degrees of risk, and that's what you have to measure when you make your investment decisions. And, of course, your gold, if you have an IRA, I tell my customers, if you can bite the bullet, pull it out. You shouldn't let penalties and taxes influence your decisions in your investments. And but if you you want to keep your funds in an IRA, well, then at least you can roll it out of that paper and put it into gold and silver. And that is the only time that you, and one that I accept that other than taking possession of your gold. So important.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting that certainly a lot of people are in the stock market. They're hoping and praying that the stock market's going to stay up, and it's amazing to me that the Dow Jones average has not dropped and dropped more dramatically until, of course, you understand that it's something called the Working Group on Financial Markets or the Plunge Protection Team, which is, of course, is a government agency. Its job is to manipulate the stock market and to manipulate your outlook, your mental outlook. And they realize, of course, that when the stock market goes up, most people who are investing in the market feel good.
Mm-hmm.
When the stock market goes down, and of course they imagine they're losing all this money, people get very depressed and angry and fretful. And so they are artificially manipulating the stock market to create the perception that the economy must be good, and yet it really isn't. Most of our major corporations are simply not making money as they have in the past, and we're in for some very difficult times. We'll be back in just a moment with Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, people have to understand that the price of housing is going down on a monthly basis all across America. Here in California, many of our major areas, Stockton, San Diego, areas where you had the greatest rise in the price of property, well, of course, the price of property is actually falling 20-25% so far, and it's got a long way yet to go, probably. A lot of this property will lose 40-60% of its value. And that, of course, is going to have a profound impact because a lot of people are going to have mortgages that are much higher than, of course, the value of their property, and yet they're paying on that mortgage a mortgage that doesn't represent the value of the property at all, and I think increasingly people are going to simply walk away from their homes. Right now they're having auctions on homes, and lots of times these auctions are bringing over only 50 cents on the dollar of the value. In fact, I was reading about some fellow went to an auction in the East. He bought a home in Detroit for $22,000. A bedroom, a several bath home in Detroit for $22,000. Of course, I don't know why anybody would want to live in Detroit at the present time, since it's a largely a Muslim community, and they have their mosque there. And if you ever lived close to one of those mosques at 4 o'clock every morning, why of course the microphone starts blaring out the call to prayer. So, but Detroit is primarily today a Muslim nation. Our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Melody Cederstrom, and we're talking about really what's happening as far as our economy is concerned. If you're looking at what's happening to the automotive industry, why General Motors is cutting back on their automotive production about 5% this year. Ford's doing the same. Chrysler's doing the same. What was so surprising is even Toyota, which produces a far superior car to anything produced here in the United States, even Toyota is having difficulty selling their cars. There are tremendous backlogs on lots all across America of automobiles, and people just are not buying the number of automobiles that they have in the past, and that's, of course, why many of the companies actually are losing money on every car they produce. Down the line, they have to sell it, they have to get it off the lots, but because of the contracts with the unions, which have not been fulfilled yet, they can't lay the people off. They have to pay them if they're off, so they're actually producing cars and selling them at less than production cost. So we've got a real problem, and of course that cuts very deeply into the monetary base of General Motors. General Motors is expanding over in China and other places in the world and contracting here at home, and this is going to have a profound impact on our and manufacturing base. What little of our manufacturing base is still intact, and certainly right now China just came in, bought a major steel mill on the East Coast. I don't know whether they're going to continue operating it here or simply move it over to China. We see more and more of our industries being bought up by the sovereign wealth funds of other countries. You cannot keep spending more than you take in year after year, as our country has, without the people who are getting all of our money wanting to do something with it. And what better thing to do than to come into the United States and simply start buying up our industries and buying up our stocks and buying up our property, and of course the profits will come. Then, of course, will accrue to other countries. We've already lost over 25% of what little manufacturing we still have. It today is owned by foreign companies. Westinghouse, what could be a more American than Westinghouse, is a Japanese company. Most people don't know that, but that's the reality. Certainly, how are things going back there in Pennsylvania, Melody? As far as the economy is concerned, I know you live in an area that's a university town, a college town, where, of course, a lot of the money comes from the government, but how's the economy doing?
Well, it's certainly slowing down, and we just had a smaller bank that was actually purchased by a larger bank, and I've spoken to some of the gals in that bank, and they've said, you know, they're losing their jobs, and they're real concerned because they're older, they're in management, and there really isn't any place for them to go. They won't be able to get the same wages, they won't be able to get the same benefits, and so now they're very concerned. And this is what's happening everywhere, and, you know, recessions have come and gone, but this time it is different because there are no jobs. The wages haven't kept up. There's no affordable housing.
Well, I think we've got a real, real problem here, and what people don't understand is that we're going to lose more and more of our manufacturing base. We're going to have more and more of our companies getting into real trouble because, of course, purchasing is beginning to cut back here in the United States. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty, and welcome your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, as you watch the papers very closely, you find out that purchasing is beginning to cut back. Americans have been the greatest consumers in the world. We've been consuming things from all over the world, and suddenly the American consumer is beginning to become a little bit wary. Some of them are realizing the importance of beginning to get out of debt. The interest rates on the credit cards is going up. Certainly a lot of the students who've been getting student loans are finding that they can't readily get student loans. If they do, the interest rate will be up to 8% or even more, which gets pretty high, especially when it's going to be many years before you're going to be able to actually make any efforts to pay back that money. And each time the interest rate goes up, well, you're compounding your debt. So there's so many things that are happening to our economy. The average individual really is relatively unaware of what's going on, other than the fact that the price of goods at the grocery store is going up. And even though the government insists that there's no inflation, that there is inflation. Certainly the people go to the gas station, they want to buy gasoline. So the gasoline I saw gasoline, I think, $4.09 for the highest octane gas. And you're talking about $3.70, $3.75 for just regular gas, the lowest octane. And, of course, I believe the price of oil is going to continue going up and up. And I think this is happening by intent. Certainly, of course, part of the reason the price of gasoline is going up is because the value of the dollar is falling. And what we've done is put ourselves into a position where we're totally dependent upon other countries for the majority of our oil, from Venezuela, from Canada, from Nigeria. Certainly, we are, and from Mexico, we import most of our oil. We don't have to. We've got massive oil supplies off of our coast, but we're not allowed to drill for it. We've got massive supplies of oil up in Alaska, at Anwar, but we're not allowed to drill at Anwar. We've got massive supplies off the North Slope of Alaska. And if you haven't read the book, The Energy Non-Crisis by Lindsay Williams, let me suggest that, or get our four tapes out on oil. You'll find out there's plenty of oil out there, but we are not developing it. We're putting ourselves into a position where, of course, the price is going to continue going up because we're totally dependent upon other countries for the bulk of our gasoline, bulk of our oil today. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom as we talk about what's going on in the economy. If you're out there and you have a question or comment, give us a call at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Melody, would you like to get your telephone number out there and certainly get your webpage, and then give us any additional thoughts that you have? I know you have your own radio program, don't you?
Yes, we do. It can be listened to on shortwave on frequency 7.415 at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also go to our website and listen to the archives. We post them on a weekly basis, and the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And our phone number here is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And also on the website, we have various things that you can read. We post a little weekly article, and so you can read that. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, listen to the archive programs.
Is it a daily program?
It is a daily program. And on Thursdays, we have an herbalist. She's very good at what she does. And so everybody can tune in. And she keeps everybody healthy. That's one thing people also need to be concerned about as we go through these times. We need to stay healthy. And the stress of what is happening and the trials and tribulations that each and every one of us faces can make each and every one of us ill. And so it's very important to stay healthy. And if you're not healthy, you can listen to our programs and she can help you, and you can link to her website from our website. But it's very important.
Okay, fine, and certainly I agree and concur with what Melody's saying. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we're simply talking about what is happening to the economy. And of course, this all gets around to the fact that we do not have a solid monetary system. Our monetary system is all built upon debt. And if you haven't read that wonderful book by Ed Griffin called The Creature from Jekyll Island, where he explains how the system works. We used to have a system that was based upon gold and silver, but we did away with gold and silver, not because the American people wanted, not because the legislature wanted, but because the elitist wanted to be able to create money out of nothing and bring us into a world feudalistic system under their control. And if you doubt what I'm saying, let me refer you to a wonderful book, probably one of the most important books we offer, called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by Professor Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor when Bill Clinton attended Georgetown University back in 64 and 65. And in, of course, the book was published in, I believe, 66, and of course, after that, of course, it was actively suppressed, because the last thing that the elitists wanted was for the people to understand that there really is a secret society that controls America, the American government, and the English government. And Professor Quigley, who had taught at both Princeton and Harvard before he went to Georgetown, lays that out. But on page, I think it's 325, he talks about the central banks and how they hold secret meetings all the time, conspiring upon, and I don't think he uses the word conspiring, but planning upon how they will control the governments of the world and how they will suddenly be able to establish a feudalistic system throughout the world. That's his words, a feudalistic system. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly what is going on today. As our living standards are going to fall, as the elderly are going to continue getting their Social Security, it'll just buy less and less and less. And this is exactly what's happening. It's supposed to be tied to the rate of inflation, but they lie about the rate of inflation so that they can actually decrease the value of the Social Security check on a monthly basis. And the average individual has no idea what is going on. Well, certainly as far as the economy is concerned, we find that many of our state governments are getting into trouble because, of course, their income, the value of the property, they get money from sales tax, the value of the property is falling, and, of course, they are not going to be getting as much in the way as they have in the past of taxes, and they're having to cut back on their hiring, and a lot of state employees are going to lose their jobs. The same thing is happening at city and county levels all across America. And certainly we find then as government begins to limit its spending, there are fewer people out there who have the money to be spending it on things, and more people lose their jobs. Why, of course, fewer and fewer people are going to be out there spending money. And so a lot of the big companies like Sears, like Target, Macy's and others, they're having real problems, and so they have to, of course, move the products, so they have to discount them steeply to get people to buy them. And this is what happens as you begin moving into a recession, and we are in a recession, and I think we're going to go ahead and move into a depression. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I agree, because, as we talked earlier, there are no jobs, the wages haven't kept up, the prices continuing to rise. There is no affordable housing in this country. I mean, we can go to sections, and we have the major population of baby boomers are beginning to retire this year, and they certainly won't be able to afford that housing on their income, particularly after it gets whacked on these pension plans and with the markets going down, the value, and again back up with the rising cost of inflation and the rising price of our food, our gasoline. So I don't see any way out this time. They can't work two jobs. They can't get a part-time job. It doesn't pay anything. It doesn't solve anything. I remember prior recessions, you could always go out. If you got a little bit behind, you could go, work an extra job, maybe even work three jobs. You could do it temporarily, pull yourself out of your little fix that you got yourself into, and you could go on your merry way. Well, those jobs aren't there anymore. And when you're competing against illegal aliens for these lower-paying jobs, And so it's tough. People don't they can't get that second job. They can't get that third job to get them out of their fix that they got themselves into. It's difficult for them to afford housing. There's no affordable housing in this country. Even if we see the pullbacks in the housing market drop 50%, I mean, who can afford these homes even with the pullback in these wages and jobs? They can't. So if you have two people that have jobs, a husband and a wife, you know, it's a pretty good chance that one will lose their job. And we're seeing it. And so, yes, I do believe we're heading into a depression. And again, it's all part of the plan.
Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. If you're here in the Central Coast of California, have thoughts about what we're talking about, but certainly nobody wants to talk about a depression, and yet, of course, we have to get rid of all of this debt that's been artificially created if we ever hope to get back to a stable economy. And, of course, I'm not sure that the rulers, the people who really run things behind the scenes, want a stable economy. I think they want to create such a crisis that we'll be willing to forego our national sovereignty and accept this global government and this global currency. And simply, this is really what they're talking about. What the elite are talking about is a global currency that will be privately owned and privately issued, which will be backed by gold. And if we had a currency that was backed by gold, even if it was privately issued, it would be widely accepted across the world because people would know you could not keep printing money and, of course, actually expand the money supply and the value of the dollar. What people don't understand is that this is the plan. At least it's been put forward in Foreign Affairs magazine, which is a theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created back in 1891. And, of course, that's the story of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which was actively suppressed after it was printed back in 1966. And if you doubt what I'm saying, we actually have an interview with Professor Quigley, which I purchased from Professor Quigley's widow. I purchased the right to reproduce it. And of course, Professor Quigley tells you how his book was suppressed. He didn't understand why it was suppressed, but he knew his book was being suppressed, and it was suppressed for many, many years. And it wasn't really until somebody took a copy of the book and made a new set of plates and began printing it as a pirate, and then Professor Quigley wanted his publisher to sue the pirate, and they wouldn't do it. So he made a deal with the pirate, he got $3 a book for every book that was distributed, and as a result, we have the book today. And Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, is one of the most important books because it explains who really runs our country. And, of course, Council on Foreign Relations is a front for a secret society. But you're never going to hear that mentioned today. Well, of course, the significant thing about this whole incredible story is the Foreign Affairs magazine is the theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations that they've recently suggested of producing a gold-backed currency that is privately issued, a privately issued gold-backed currency. And this may very well be what is planned. In fact, my friend Dennis Kelly was telling me that in his book, Now is the Dawning, he tells that the story of how a great deal of American gold was taken to Europe and put on the market, and who do you think bought it up? Why, the Rockefellers bought up, who has had the billions of dollars at their disposal to buy up large amounts of gold, and they bought up that gold over in Europe, and of course, this was some years ago. And the reason this is known is because one of their employees made this public statement, and you never guess what happened to her. Why, she died very, very shortly after she admitted that the Rockefellers, and this was some years ago, were buying up a large part of our government's gold and keeping it and storing it in Europe. I wonder why, or maybe they're going to work with some of the other great families of the world to bring about this new global currency. But of course, if we're going to have a global government, we need a global currency. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Melody, what do you advocate that people do to protect their life savings today? I mean, how much of their money should they have in gold? How much should they have in silver? What sort of gold should they buy? How can they protect what they've worked their whole life for?
Well, I recommend a minimum. And to me, I think it should be a lot greater, but people who are new to the market get a little surprised. I say a minimum of 30 to 50% of your assets should be in gold and silver. When I see there isn't anything else out there, I think it should be a lot higher. Of course, you need to keep some cash for your emergencies and your normal daily living expenses on a monthly basis. But I have yet to have someone bring to me an investment that carries less risk than gold at this point in time. And I believe it's okay to be on the sidelines, to wait and see what happens, to wait and see what how the system purges. I suppose there's always other investments that you can get into in the future, depending how this all plays out. I mean, ultimately, we know how it's going to play out, but things will come along the way. But that is a minimum as a starting point for most folks. Of that, 80% should be gold, 20% should be silver. And, of course, I usually have to fight those who believe silver will do better than gold. And, of course, I believe it's also a personal investment decision. It's what is your objective. I'm here to advise the position and the percentages of how you can break up your portfolio, how you can diversify. If you have a strong belief into silver and you want to have a 70-30 or a 50-50, that's okay. But it's my job also to help you get the right coins and get the right diversification. But the reason I always say 80% gold, 20% silver is because as we go through these times, you want stability in your portfolio. When you're preserving your wealth, you want stability. And as we see silver, you have more volatility. And sure, you can have bigger gains percentage-wise, but you also have that on the downside. So if you want to preserve something, you want to stay away from volatility, and gold will give you stability. Gold has been the major monetary metal all these years. It's the central banks who are buying and manipulating gold, not silver. Although there are some that say gold, silver is also manipulated, and I'm sure it is to some degree, but not to the degree of silver. People turn to gold for quality. People turn to gold for the stability when there's uncertainty and to hedge themselves against inflation. So that's why it's important to be heavier in gold than silver. And then we break it down, and I believe in being diversified in various coins, but it is important that you take an active part in understanding of what should be included in your portfolio. Oftentimes, Dr. Stan, I have customers who call me and they tell me, I don't have a clue what I'm doing, but I want to buy gold and silver. And all I say is, thank goodness you called me. Because if you say that to some of these other dealers that are out there around this country, you'd be getting items that you wouldn't want, that probably wouldn't preserve your wealth. It does make a difference of the coins that you hold in your possession. So there's good coins and there's bad coins, and I shouldn't say there's bad coins because actually they're all good coins. But I believe in keeping things simple. I believe in keeping things in a balance, and that's what I try to do.
Well, I know that sometimes people will try to sell people gold medallions, and of course a lot of these things are commemorative coins, and a lot of these things that get a 30% or so markup on that, and it'll take you years, of course, to ever get back the value you put into them. I think there are an awful lot of people out there in the gold business who are pretty unscrupulous, don't you?
Absolutely. Dr. Stan, I've seen portfolios where coins have been purchased, and when gold was at $500, and these people are still in the hole. And that's horrible. And so, and if you have that type of a coin, you're better off selling it, taking a loss, and getting something that will actually benefit you in the shorter term, where at least you might be able to recoup those losses. And it's just horrible, the things that I've seen and the coins that have been sold. And again, it's not the coins, but it's the coins sold to the wrong people and at the wrong price.
Amen to that. Well, let's get your webpage out and your telephone number one more time, Melody.
The webpage is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And the phone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Melody Cederstrom, and Melody is certainly one of our favorite guests. She's with us a couple of times a month. She supports Radio Liberty. We certainly support her. We think she takes good care of people, and we certainly never had one single complaint from. In fact, everybody says how much they love Melody Cederstrom. Well, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I enjoy being here, and as I said, the past couple of weeks have been an unusual to the markets. And if we did happen, if someone called and they couldn't get through, or perhaps we didn't call you back on a timely manner, please give us a call and we'll get you fixed. We always take care of our customers. We're not perfect, but if we do something or we lack, we always make up for it. I'm probably the only dealer in the country that if I make a mistake or perhaps for some reason your delivery is lengthened by a couple days, I'll put a little surprise in your package to make up for it. So, and most of my customers say, well, gee, I wish you were late on my package, so we get that little surprise. I can't do it to everybody, but those are the little things that we do that no one else, as far as I know, does in this whole country. So we do take care of you, but we're not perfect. But give us a call. It's important that you preserve your wealth. If you'd like to have your current portfolios reviewed, give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to price it out for you. We had also gotten a little behind on our emails, so we're trying to catch up on those. But I do want to thank everyone for their support of Discount Gold and Silver, because it's all about you and preserving your wealth. And that's what we try to do.
Have you taken on a new employer? The last couple of times I've talked to you, there's been a lady, I don't remember talking to her before.
Yes, it was getting too much to handle. So, yes, we have someone that is helping me now. In fact, we also have an additional person that works part-time in order just to keep the paperwork up to date. And yes, I do have help now. So now I only work 15 hours a day.
Well, I'm glad you do have help, and I'm glad you're so busy that you had to take help on. And of course, it's really the most important thing I've learned through many, many years is to have good help, and you don't have to pay them, but certainly it's important that you have somebody there who's enthusiastic and supportive and really believes in what you're doing. And the lady I've talked to has certainly always been very, very helpful and certainly very, very pleasant to talk to.
You know, one thing, it's very difficult to find someone nowadays to trust.
I know. Yes. Especially when you're doing what you're doing and dealing with the things that you're doing. But I hope everything continues going well for you. Well, anyway, our guest has been Melody Cederstrom, Discount Gold and Silver. And one more time, the telephone number?
1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Bye-bye.
I also want to thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you. You're more than welcome. Bye. Good night. God bless.
Good night. God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan once again. And for those of you who do not understand anything about what we're talking about finances, let me suggest my little pamphlet. It's called The History of Money. And another pamphlet is called The Financial Meltdown. They're simply compilations of some of our newsletters, but there's a lot of great information in there that will help you to really begin to grasp what's going on. And I have wonderful quotations of what I remember so well from Aristotle, who said, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as we have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. And remember Aristotle... lived about 20, he died in in 2042, something like that. It was about 2200 years after before ago, about 230 or 40 years before Christ was born. And of course, he saw what had happened in ancient Greece, and he said there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. Ladies and gentlemen, we do not have perfect authority. We do not have godlike wisdom in our presidents, and this is why the fiat money system is going to collapse, and it's in the process of collapsing now. We carry a very good talk that I've given. It's called Financial Tsunami. If you haven't seen it, it's available on DVD or on video. It certainly goes into the background of the financial system. There's a syllabus that goes with it that will explain to you about the gold, where our gold is, or at least part of our gold is, and of course the meaning of the various terms that they use, the hedge funds, the derivatives, the carry trade, M1, M2, M3. You need to understand what they're talking about if you hope to survive the difficult times. We carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, an excellent book, an important book. We carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, written by Professor Anthony Sutton, who is a personal friend, and of course we interviewed him on a number of occasions. We even have a video with him talking about the best enemies money could buy, not on this matter of finance, but his book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, is very important. And then a little book was written 100 years ago about something that happened over 200 years ago called Fiat Money Inflation in France. And in 1789, after the French Revolution, why they established a fiat money system in France and backed their money by the property that they'd confiscated from the Catholic Church. And they thought that this would be a wonderful system and would produce instant prosperity, and it did. And the prosperity grew until, of course, all this money was out there, the price of goods went up, and then, of course, the economy began to contract, so they had to issue more money, just like our Federal Reserve is doing today. And again, it rectified the situation, but only for a short period of time, and they had to keep issuing more money and more money and more money until the whole system collapsed, just as it did, certainly, after the Revolutionary War here, as it did in France in the early 1700s under John Law, and then, of course, in the period after 1789 until, of course, the whole system collapsed and they established a dictatorship under a man named Napoleon Bonaparte. And the same thing has happened in pre-Nazi Germany in the 1920s and early 1930s. It's going on in Rhodesia today, where, of course, the rate of inflation today is 10,000% a year. 10,000% a year. Well, we're not there yet, but given enough time, if we don't return to a sound financial system, we will go as all fiat currencies have always done throughout all history, because there's nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.